And I'm thinking of supposing you've got a luxury apartment over three stories. That water that puts out the fire has to go somewhere. And sometimes not only can it flood that flat that it's protecting, but that water can trickle down and damage other flats below.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted Podcast, where we dedicate our discussion to insurance innovation. So as you all know me, I love to get a diverse perspective on what's happening in the insurance industry and also how other industries are impacting this great industry called insurance. So you all are really going to enjoy today's guest. He has a really great perspective on how the fire industry can impact the insurance industry. And we know with large property, of course, the largest cause of loss is fire. I was pretty excited to get Yusuf on the podcast and to talk to him about what he's seeing and also what his organization is doing. I hope you all are going to enjoy today's podcast. But before we jump in, I do want to recognize the sponsor of this episode, and that's Vortex Legal.
Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal's solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com.
So today I'm speaking with Yusuf Mohammed, the co-founder and design director for Plumas, a company that produces a modern alternative to fire sprinklers that aims to create active fire protection to homes. Yusuf, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, so, Yusuf, your concept isn't directly innovating insurance, but it does have direct implications to the industry. So, before we get into those details specifically about what Plumas is, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about your background prior to co-founding Plumas.
Okay. I am a mechanical engineer and an industrial designer by trade. I began studying a course in innovation design engineering. It's a joint course at Imperial College London and the Royal College of Art. And this was 12 years ago. And for my final year group project, we said we'd like to make a difference in an emergency situation. So we went down to our local fire brigade and we did a brainstorming session with them and tried to come up with ideas that would improve fire safety. And one of the sort of technologies which resonated in the conversations was water mist and how it was used offshore, and firefighters used water mist when they were sort of changing their nozzle, their hose setting for particular types of fire. And I just got really excited about that and sort of worked with my colleagues to come up with a design so that you could bring this sort of technology into the home.
Awesome. So just thinking about that, so your history is engineering, of course, and then, overlaid that with innovation. So now, as I think about Plumas specifically, what exactly are you guys doing and what's the value proposition for your product and then how it relates to the insurance industry?
Well, what we're really trying to do is create a fire sprinkler that is ideal for the home. Now, the traditional sprinkler system has remained fundamentally unchanged since it was invented. And it was invented a very long time ago in 1882, the first sort of practical sprinkler. But it was designed with commercial premises in mind. This is where it started. And unfortunately, translating that technology into the home environment means that there are some limitations in effectiveness. In a commercial environment, you have a maintenance manager, you have a safety officer who can check the pipe work, make sure everything's working. But in the home, they're often ignored. They're sort of designed to blend in. And as a result, they are not often maintained and can lose effectiveness. So our whole value proposition is to create a better sprinkler that is effective and better suited for the home. Part of the reason we use water mist, so very fine droplets of water, is because it minimizes the amount of damage that causes, that consequential damage that is caused when they activate. But beyond that, it means it's much easier to install because you don't need a tank or you don't need a existing water main, a commercial water main.
So just knowing that it's not necessary to have the commercial water main, just that, you know, how exactly is the technology working? Is it hooked up to the home's water systems, or, you know, how does that play out?
So when we were designing the product, we set the brief. We wanted to ensure that it could run with the existing water supply to your home. So you don't need, you need very small amount of water. So on the premise that we would use 10 times less the amount of water of a traditional sprinkler, we set about, well, how can we use a really small amount of water to put out the same sorts of fires that a traditional sprinkler can tackle? So the way we did this is by incorporating an intelligent sensor on our head. So rather than mounting our nozzles on the ceiling, we mount them lower down, and we have a heat sensor. So we scan the room, we're looking for the location of the fire, and when we identify it, we spray these fine droplets of water into it. So we have a targeted system, so water isn't wasted, it's used where it's needed.
You know, I so if I'm correct, the system that you're talking about that you all created is the Automist Smart Scan, right? You know, just thinking about the way that typical sprinkler systems work, as you're aware, if they're in the event of a fire, the sprinkler head will just spray water everywhere into the room until the fire is put out. Now, you know, when I take that from the context of how insurance companies look at that, right? You know, so not only does a location suffer damage from the fire, but it also suffers damage from the water because of, you know, the need to put that fire out and to potentially mitigate the potential for a larger loss. So, you know, when you think about the value proposition of Plumist, you know, how exactly do you see this playing out and innovating the way that losses or potential fires could occur in regards to how the insurance industry would see your product?
It's a great question. And for us, we think it's a really exciting space because not only can we help insurers by reducing damage and claims, so using much, much less water to tackle fires, you know, we're not going to have total losses that can sometimes be really synonymous with traditional sprinkler activations. And I'm thinking of supposing you've got a luxury apartment over three stories. That water that puts out the fire has to go somewhere. And sometimes not only can it flood that flat that it's protecting, but that water can trickle down and damage other flats below. So mitigating damage is one thing. And one of the things that we're doing at the moment is we're at the plug and play InsurTech incubator and trying to understand and work with insurers to find which particular parts of their portfolio where there's risks that we can address and cause less damage. But beyond that, as a InsurTech hub, we're really excited about the idea of being a way of enabling the smart home. One of the kind of problems with InsurTech devices or smart home devices is that they require the homeowner to sort of buy a gadget or buy a widget and maybe retrofit them into their home. But because traditional sprinklers in some states are mandatory, it's already a sunk cost that the homeowner has had to sort of put up with. You know, it's a safety feature that is required by the state, and you just kind of have to have it. There's no sort of additional benefits other than that safety blanket that it provides. So we're really excited about the idea of sort of moving this sprinkler beyond just the fire safety device. So maybe we're actually going to use the sensors that we use to detect the fire to control your thermostat. Maybe we're going to have on our head, we can tell you if you need to only heat one side of your home as opposed to the other, because this is where people are. Or we're going to encourage you to have a nozzle in your garage so you can use the same pump which drives the system to, say, wash your car. But the whole idea here is that your sprinkler system, which is a sunk cost, can give you additional benefits that not only sort of add value, they also turn over the pump, so you're more likely to maintain it, and it's more likely to operate correctly when it's called upon.
Yeah, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? Especially sort of under the context of IoT devices, which in essence is what your autonomous sensor is. Just digging a little bit deeper into the insurance space, what we've seen on both the personal and the commercial line side of the house is that with IoT, you know, adoption, it seems to be fairly low overall. And what I attribute that to is, you know, people not really understanding sort of the value proposition, especially when you bring it under the context of insurance instead of the potential for loss mitigation, even outside of the insurance space. So, you know, I've seen that play out in both the commercial both the personal side of the house as well. So, you know, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, why do you see IoT, or why do you think IoT adoption has been, fairly minimal up until this point when you look at the overall population, and how do you think that we'll sort of have the opportunity to increase adoption across all segments?
It's a great question. I think part of the reason that, you know, we think IoT adoption hasn't been sort of taken up is because it's very much a B2G offering, and rather than business to consumer, it's a business to geek is what I would, as how we would classify it. So we've got these early adopters, we've got these enthusiasts who really like the idea of their lights turning on, or this, whatever the product might be. But for the vast majority of people, the offering is not significant enough for them to sort of disrupt what they're normally doing. What we have works good enough. A bit more convenience isn't quite necessary. So I think the person, or the people who in the value chain who really see the most benefits currently out of IoT devices are insurers, are people who are potentially selling auxiliary services. So for us, we've just thinking about, well, how can we make the consumer the focus of the offering? And that is particularly prevalent, I think, and the reason why sprinklers offer a lot of appeal is because sprinklers aren't very popular with consumers because of the damage, because of the maintenance, and when they leak, it can be awful. But because you have to have it, because it's a requirement, if you can have one which costs the same but offers you more, it's a very easy sell. This is our view.
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting view. You know, it should absolutely become an easy sell as consumers begin to understand sort of the value that comes out of it. You know, as you look across the adoption, I just know of domestically as well as throughout the European and some of the Asian markets that a lot of the insurance carriers are offering IoT devices as a part of their policies in order to mitigate claims. But, you know, personally, I just feel that individuals and policyholders should be well invested in leveraging IoT devices to prevent claims on their premises. So, you know, just thinking about a piece you wrote recently, you know, so you wrote a piece about how the fire industry can influence the future of IoT. And in that, you know, you drew parallels to the insurance industry and the fire industry. So if you don't mind, you know, talk about those parallels and, you know, where you see the insurance and the fire sprinkler industry converging to potentially minimize risk?
Sure. I think that the insurance industry is very similar in a lot of ways to the fire industry in how it evolves and how it kind of deals with customers. If you take the analogy of a sprinkler system and its sort of relationship with the consumer, you basically have a device which is required by law in a number of states and a number of environments. The consumer sort of kind of, he doesn't really want it. They kind of have to have it. And in fact, when it activates, it's a hassle for everyone. You've got water everywhere. You've got, you've put the fire out, but there's almost a consequence to having your property saved and what have you. So it's not to say it's not a good thing, but the relationship with the consumer has room for improvement. And if I think about insurance, not too long ago, it's very similar, where consumers have to have a policy. If you take auto insurance, for example, when things go wrong, you'll have paperwork to fill out, you have a claim to go on, take photos and what have you, and an insurer would only have sort of a relationship or a touch point with the consumer when something did go wrong. Now, with, as I'm sure you're aware, with auto insurance now, you're seeing more insurance companies change that relationship to prevention, where they're having a continual dialogue with the consumer about their habits. They're putting telemetric devices in vehicles so they can track the way in which people are driving, give people different premiums depending on their behavior. And I think the fire space will do the same, because the best way to prevent something from happening is to think about prevention, is to think about how can I have a relationship with the consumer so they're more aware of their fire risk, understand the value that safety can play in mitigating that. And when something does happen that's unfortunate, it causes the least amount of problem possible.
Yeah, I think that makes absolute sense, especially around the way that the industry is starting to operate today, because of the fast evolution of technology, right? So today you're seeing more prevention versus just paying out for the loss after it occurs, and you're seeing that all across the board, to the point that you made in auto insurance with the telemetric devices, or the devices that are being placed in the vehicles to help understand what happened during a claim, but also to help drivers prevent a claim, that's being developed by some of these auto companies and so on. So I definitely see that overall that things are starting to shift, and what you all are doing is helping along the way from a prevention perspective. Now, with the traditional sprinkler systems, I'm just wondering, I think the device that you all have designed, especially for the home, is much more effective at really targeting where the potential fire is and putting that fire out or limiting the spread of that fire. But I also see an application in the commercial space, especially when you talk about loss mitigation and loss mitigation from the water that's occurring that could potentially go down several floors if there's a fire at a higher floor within the building. So, from your perspective, do you see this system either augmenting or replacing a traditional sprinkler system? And what are your thoughts around the long-term view of when this may occur?
It's a great question. I think there's definitely applications within the commercial space. I think part of the reason we have focused on residential, at least initially, is because the traditional sprinkler isn't as sort of widespread, and there's low hanging fruit in terms of opportunity for us. We've kind of made that our bread and butter in the UK. And you can imagine, in order to sell a fire safety product, there's so much testing and validation that you have to go through. So we have a base in testing and understanding, thinking around the types of fire that you see in a home, difficult fires, concealed fires, oil pan fires. So we've tested our products. We've got a library of data and live scale testing that we've done. So for us to move into the commercial space, we're going to have to repeat that sort of testing. And it might be different for server rooms as opposed to commercial deep fat fryers. So this is the reason we've kind of been thinking about the commercial, the residential space initially. I think in terms of the long-term view for the company, it's a funny one because in some ways, in order for people to kind of understand and take our proposition seriously, we have to end up invariably comparing ourselves to traditional sprinklers, to traditional solutions, and saying, look, we're better at this, we are more effective on this particular type of fire. But really, in the safety space, there isn't a better solution. There is one solution which is better for one environment, and there is another solution which is better for another space. And what we're keen to do is work with fire safety professionals, fire engineers, authorities having jurisdiction to identify areas where what we currently have isn't adequate to meet the needs, and slotting in and making sure that we have the best possible solution for that avenue. Because ultimately, in safety, I think it's so important that we are pushing the best technology, the latest developments, so everyone and environments are safer.
Absolutely, you know. So you know, I think about where you are today and what, and to your point, what you just talked about for the future and what that potential of growth is, and when I think about the sprinkler industry, you know, especially in places like high-rise buildings and where there's a significant potential of loss to life in the event of a fire, the point that you made a little bit earlier, there's a legislative there's a requirement, a legal requirement, that these buildings, you know, house sprinkler systems to prevent that concentration of loss and significant loss. So, you know, in your future, you know, are you all also thinking about working with legislative bodies to also enable the ability to have these types of systems, which, to your point, it's not going to fully replace the sprinkler system, but can augment the process also, you know, as a requirement to prevent loss as a part of a life safety requirement in high rises?
It could well be a place for us to go. I think our sort of mantra is improving safety for people. And I think that is best placed when a number of these things to come together. So our core at the moment is this innovative, transformative fire sprinkler. But what's not to say that this is just a part of a smart home, a smart building offering that potentially even has an insurance arm. So we are using our own system to offset the risk, and we are insuring the property. Maybe we're working with partners in order to do that. But you know, in all of my research into the safety space, it's when a number of things come together that you can create something that's robust and it works for all of the stakeholders involved.
So, you know, with Plumas, you know, you all, as you mentioned, started over in the UK and now you have an office in the US. And, you know, I on this podcast, I love to talk about some of the challenges that organizations that are expanding like yours go through as you're jumping into new markets. So if you don't mind, you know, when you all got into the U.S. markets, you know, what were some of the specific challenges that you faced? And you know, how are you approaching coming into this market, knowing that it's a little bit different from the market that you started in?
It's been the learning curve has been really high. I mean, I think you know, I came into even the fire industry in itself as an engineer and a designer, and you know, curious and keen to ask questions and learn as much as possible. But in fact, our journey across the pond was in part because there was his name is Sonny Scarf, and he's involved in fire safety. He was involved. He's retired now for fire safety for Marriott hotels. And he said, look, I saw your system. I think it has excellent potential. Why don't you come over to Maryland and do some fire testing at MIFRI, which is a fire research institution in Maryland. So we came across with our system. There were a lot of stakeholders and fire marshals who visited. They saw the technology work and they thought, wow, there's definitely a space and opportunity for this product. So it's, I think, particularly in fire safety, when you have fire marshals with a duty of care and they see something that they think can help improve safety, it's part of their remit, it's part of their passion, it's part of their job, then they're kind of, you can find a lot of people who are very keen to say, well, look, how can we make this work? What sort of testing and validation do I have to do so I can feel comfortable to use this in the same way that it's being used in the UK? So we found that with fire safety professionals across the US, whether that's in Underwriters Laboratory, who are currently testing some of our products, or whether it's fire marshals on the East Coast. So at the moment, we're doing different pilot installations, mainly in and around the Maryland area. But it is our intention to launch the product fully once we've kind of figured out our value proposition, how exactly the route to market is going to work, and concluded the UL listing of the product. So this is the sort of big rubber stamp that basically is taking the testing and data which we've done in the UK and translating it to US standards and US buildings and US approaches. So it's definitely been a long, arduous process, one that's not over yet, but we're super excited and I've been really impressed and amazed with the kind of people along the way who have been keen to get us here.
And you know, just knowing the process that you're going through, have you all also started approaching insurance organizations in the U.S. and you know, domestically here, just to the point that, you know, we talked a little bit about earlier, knowing that insurance companies are typically the organizations that take this and you know, try to make it more ubiquitous in the space in order to enable loss prevention. So, you know, have you already started approaching insurance companies, or is that at some point on your roadmap?
Yes, we have. This is why we're at the plug and play incubator in Silicon Valley. They have an insurtech vertical. We're part of that program. So they've been helping us meet with different insurance companies, sort of facilitating the conversation with decision makers. We're still in the early stages. I think our demo day is even going to take place towards the end of the year. If this is really the beginning for us, so you know, we're keen to speak to anyone who has sort of a similar vision to us, can see the potential, and is willing to think about how an innovation like ours might feed into their business.
Absolutely. You know, so Yusuf, you know, one of the things that I always like to ask in order to really make the, you know, what you and I talk about, what you and I are talking about tangible for the folks that are listening is, you know, your background, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, is innovation. You know, so if someone that's listening to us talk, you know, really wanted to go back to their desks and change the status quo and do something innovative within their roles, you know, what specific advice would you give that individual?
Well, I think for me, design and innovation is about bringing together contrasting or different ideas and departments. I think part of the reason I'm able to innovate, or we were able to innovate in this space, was because we were naive and uninformed as to what the status quo was. So I think sometimes when you know too much about an industry, you stop questioning why things are the way they are. So, you know, when we started and we developed our very first product, we were just like, well, this is an interesting technology. What if it worked like this? And we were able to come to a solution because there were people with expertise and knowledge who helped sort of shape and push our initial idea into a framework that could exist in what was there already. So I would say to innovators that they should be looking for problems and opportunities slightly outside of their comfort zone, and then hopefully using their own knowledge, their own background, and speaking to as many people as possible to try and build up a value proposition that everyone agrees is beneficial.
Absolutely. So hey, Yusuf, you know, I want to say thank you for taking time to talk to myself and the audience about Plumas and what your value proposition is. You know, if anyone wanted to learn more or wanted to get in contact with you, you know, what's the best way for them to do that?
Okay, well, we have a website, www.plumas.com for the US. We've got co.uk for the UK there. We're on Twitter, we're on YouTube. You can always drop us an email as well. The channels are there on our website, but we're keen to talk to as many people as possible. Anyone who can kind of help steer us on this journey that we're so excited about fulfilling.
Great. Well, hey, Yusuf, you know, once again, I want to say thank you. I truly appreciate it, and I just look forward to continuing to following the successes of Plumas.
Thank you very much for taking the time, Abel. It's been really good.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening again to this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted Podcast. Now, of course, if this is your first time listening, hit that subscribe button on whatever you're using to listen, Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is, so you can get all episodes every Thursday. So, you know, hopefully you got a lot out of this discussion that I had with Yusuf today, but I do truly want to say thank you for listening, and of course, we will see you next week.